It's time now for Alaska Tracks, an oral history of Alaska people and their way of life, celebrating the rich heritage, wild landscapes, and deeply rooted stories of Alaska past. Alaska Tracks, brought to you by Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Mont Saw Shop. And now your host, respected wildlife biologist and outdoorsman, Randy Zarnke.
Hello, Fairbanks and surrounding area. After a record-setting winter, I hope you're getting outdoors to enjoy this warmer weather. I'm Randy Zarnke, and I'll be your host for today's episode of Alaska Tracks, where we listen to excerpts from interviews I've recorded with veteran outdoorsmen and women. Last week, we heard lots of great stories from Gator Meyer of Anderson, Alaska. Among other things, he told us how he got that great nickname. We also got a feel for his love of hunting and trapping. Lucky for us, Gator had enough stories to fill another program. Let's get into it with Gator talking about some of his favorite people and his favorite places to hunt.
I never saw Dana Wolf or Wolverine. He sealed them for me, but I never saw them in it. He used to have the contest for the skinning, so I couldn't enter a wolf hide. Percy Dyke and Nana. We're really good friends, too. We've been friends since I come to Alaska. There's a heck of a good guy, too, you know. A lot of them guys are good guys. Them trappers.
Now, your son comes up from Eagle River and still traps your lines out here?
He's got my line, it's his now. Yeah, he's been doing it for some time now. Stays at the house, he goes out on the machine, comes back, next day you go out again.
It's a real long-distance trap line.
Oh, yeah, but see, he makes the fuel sets along the highway, too. Because sometimes you say, I got a coyote on the way back. When Ted got the first one last year, he got the biggest one in the pack. A beautiful one. He said he got 500 for it, and a fur auction bank got the highest price. There's one Ted got. See how he does it? He's real neat about it. Just yeah. The way I did. He started from a kid. Even the little ermine. We do them real neat, too. They're not worth nothing. But you catch them. Ted will skin it out. His legs tack it a little. We got a little boards for him. He does everything the same way. That's the way I showed him.
Any comments about the Trappers Association? You've been real actively involved, a very generous donor of knives.
Yeah, I wanted to go to the few meetings or maybe to your trapping thing, but in them later years, I just didn't have the energy to do it anymore.
You must believe in what we do.
Yeah, I do believe in what you do. Very good one. I started helping them years ago in early stages. I went to the fling one time, and I didn't know none of the guys. I met one of the guys that was in the group. I seen where people donated stuff. And I remember one time, in the early days, most of the stuff that they had for the fling, I gave. But, you know, I also help other organizations give knives, too, a lot of them. Matter of fact, up there next to that black bear, there's a whole bunch of patches. About every one of them I've donated knives. The Sheep Foundation, different ones. I've helped through the years giving knives because I love to do the stuff and I like people to win stuff. And I'm going to keep doing it to trappers till I ain't here anymore.
Tell us a little bit about your moose hunting experiences. Maybe the first one you got or the biggest one you got or...
I hunted with a guy named Wendell Neff. He came from Fairbanks. He lived out here. I met him when I come up. We bought the track rig together. It was red. It's green now. I sold it here a year or two ago.
Now, there's a picture in here of your track rig. It's called Bigfoot.
Yeah, that's some muskeg tractor. We've taken 14 through the years. 60 or better. 72 and a half is the biggest spread.
And that's all out on the flats?
No. Somewhere all the way back by Gold King, back in that area. I'm taking big ones at Ferry. The first big one I got, the 68 and a half incher, when Ted was just a little baby. That one there I got back at Ferry. And then we go west between here and Healy. But now there's so many people in there, they found out how we were getting in there and everything. And there was one guy that had a camp, and he hunted early season with a bunch of guys in a little group, and they would take maybe three, four, most five at the most. And then when he come out, I'd see he was home here, and I'd call him up and say, how'd it look over there? And he'd tell me. And then we'd go in the last 5 days of the season usually, six at the most. And we'd close it out because that's when the moose are starting to get together with get cows. And we'd sit and watch them for days until they started getting together. And there was nobody in there disturbing them and shooting them up like some of the guys now. We used to talk about it later years when they started, more guys were coming back to the west. I said, pretty soon, we haven't seen a cow between the highway and 6 miles to that first hill you climb. We have not seen a cow in about 6 years in here. What's that tell you? But they had all that land give away between Healy and Clear here. The first years, they didn't have a road to get in there off the highway with a vehicle. So they parked along the road all the time. That's before there was even a road through the canyon down there to the park. And I noticed the place for all outer state. You used to see a lot of moose there. Every time I went to Healy, I'd see moose along the road. Bulls, cows, calves. Pretty soon I go, man, I hadn't seen a moose in a month. But as it went on, there were more people. They go fast when they start abusing it. Wendell and I, we get a big old bull and split it. It lasts till March, April. We look for good trophies. If we can, we get a moose. But we took time. The bigger the moose, the more meat. And the guy said, I like the young ones. But if you've seen a big one, you chewed it, wouldn't you? You're darn right. They go, it's not how big the moose is or what the moose is. It's how you take care of that meat. I've got them in the rut. You get that hide away from that rut. I don't bring that hide out. If I did, I'd drag it behind the track rag on the ground. I've got them in there smell so bad in the rut. You just get that away. I lay a tarp next to the thing and put the quarters, pull it loose as we go. And then I got the place already to hang the meat out there in the woods. So we pull in and hang it up that same day. Get a tarp over it for rain. The wind blows underneath it. Meat's almost like leather when you get it home. And then if you wake up in the morning and it's sun and bluebird skies, I'm coming out. If it's rainy, I might wait another day. One time we almost got them out here. We were about by 7 Mile Lake coming out, and we hit a rainstorm there, and we covered the moose over the side with a tarp and everything. But, you know, that rain still got on the bed and everything. Got home here. The wife just said, back up here, and she went and got the vinegar and wiped it down vinegar on the quarters before we put them in the meat house, and everything was good. Vinegar and a sponge or a cloth, and just wipe it down. Pulls the water out. And then I'll go check it the next day. I throw pepper on it, it's the flies on it. But you know what? Flies don't lay eggs on good meat. They start hanging around a bullet hole or something. I'll cut that around a bullet hole so nice and pack some of that pepper. They won't lay no eggs in it. And when I used to get a bear down, I'd carry that pepper with me. I'd put it in the nose, because that's where they lay eggs, in the nose and the ears and that. I'd put it in the nose, the mouth, a bear, while I'm skinning it out there. Otherwise, you don't notice that they laid them in there. Because see the blood's in the nose. They might bleed to the nose some. They're going to lay where that blood is. But they won't lay eggs on good meat. And then the liver, I carry these big coolers on the rig. I got mice in them. Put it in these plastic bags and just pound it tight. Okay, we'd get a moose, bring the liver in. I'd lay the liver out at night to cool down. Next morning, I'd get up just at the break of day. I'd get up and I'd go back and get the liver, set it on the table. I start cutting it up in packages, put it in there, and put it in the cooler. That guy's leave that liver out there. In the daytime, it gets 80 degrees. The liver gets warm. Then it gets cool. Then when they bring it home, it's not fit to eat. So I had the liver cut up in packages for the wife. She just put it in the freezer. It's things like that. See, my dad had that dairy farm. He said, hell, you can ruin a cow, too. It ain't the animal. It's what they do to it, you know. So I was real critical about that. I wouldn't even shoot a moose if it was raining. We were coming out one time, and it was raining buckets. We just got in camp. I just got there. It's raining like hell. He went to the end and tried to shoot one. I hear the shooting, and I just matter. And hell, I'm getting the tent ready and everything, and I go, it's almost dark, and he shot a moose, and it's raining. I'm not going to go back and help him with it. When he gets there, I say, you do it yourself. He come back. He said, yeah, I did shoot, but I didn't get it because he took off. Said, did you go see if there's blood anywhere? Yeah. And I looked. I know it took him a long time to get back. When he said, well, you know what? I wouldn't have went and helped you. You piss me off doing something that stupid. They waste more moose. Most of them don't know how to take care of a moose. They ruin the meat. Tell guys how to do it.
So what's the biggest mistake that they make?
A lot of guys got the moose out and they hang with the hide on it so to keep the meat clean. And in the later years here, man, we've had 80 degrees during moose season. Man, that's too hot. We used to have places where we hung the moose in the big timber where we get up on the roof of the track rig and run a pole across. And put a tarp over it and tie it down, huge blue tarp. And then if you need be, put a couple on the side. And the air would have gotten in there and the meat would be perfect.
Well, you mentioned your son a couple of different times. And you remember some of the early hunting trips with him?
In the early days, he never went with me hunting because I couldn't get him out of school. I did take him out of school one time. We had to do his homework and everything, you know, which I didn't mind. When he was 13, took his first moose. It was, look in here. It'll be show you in here. 50-something. 52 and a half.
Kind of the family album?
Yeah, I've got hundreds of thousands of pictures of actually trapping.
So this photograph of your son above the door, was that taken nearby here?
It was taken halfway to Healy, and we took the track rig into the west. That's where we hunted moose. We probably counted some of the years like 14, 15 bulls around 60 inches, 50 inches all over. But it didn't take long once we had to get in there. I knew it was going to happen. We talked about it, the old guy and me. And then they caught us unloading by the highway one time, the guys we didn't want in there.
Now, is this the same one here? It shows him at age 14 with 64 and a half inch.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's an old moose.
I told Ted, like about 3 years before, he was in the high 70s. he was losing ground. But I hadn't seen him like a couple of years, and I thought maybe he died or got hurt during the rut and the wolves brought him down. But I got to tell you something. We were going after a better one. That one, this is a record book there, that 67 and a half. But we were going after one that was better than that one. On the front beams, looked to me like he had 6 or 7 on one and maybe 8 on the back, just loaded with points. He was right in the prime, that bull was. And I said to Ted, that's a better one than mine in the shop. That's the one we were going after. But when we went after, Ted wasn't keeping his eye on it when I moved the rig to get into the area. The moose walked in the bush. I stopped and said, where'd that moose go? Is he still over there? And he goes, no. So now I just creep in there easy, and then we drove up on the hill he was on, shut it off, and we sat there looking, and never did see that one. We sat there for about a half an hour, 45 minutes, and all of a sudden, that one he got comes out about 200 yards, some little ponds that nobody knows about are hid in the willows. A bull walked off on that, and I go, oh, man, that one's a big one. So he leaned across the roof, one shot, and down he went. We stood there for a second. I said, don't. Because the guys keep shooting, adrenaline gets pumped out and might run off. I've never had a moose run off like that. Because if you shoot and he stops, he don't know what happened. He really don't know that shot. We only won. But he knows something's going wrong. And he'll stand there. He'll get dropped pretty soon, over he goes. But if you get a bunch of guys shooting at it, they'll keep going. They don't understand that, them guys.
Gator never pulled any punches. He told it like it was. Let's stop here for a few minutes of sponsor commercials. Hello, Fairbanks and surrounding area. After a record-setting winter, I hope you're getting outdoors to enjoy this warmer weather. I'm Randy Zarnke, and I'll be your host for today's episode of Alaska Tracks, where we listen to excerpts from interviews I've recorded with veteran outdoorsmen and women. Last week, we heard lots of great stories from Gator Meyer of Anderson, Alaska. Among other things, he told us how he got that great nickname. We also got a feel for his love of hunting and trapping. Lucky for us, Gator had enough stories to fill another program. Let's get into it with Gator talking about some of his favorite people and his favorite places to hunt.
I never sold Dean a wolf or a wolverine. He sealed them for me, but I never sold them any. He used to have the contest for the skinning, so I couldn't enter a wolf hide. Percy Dyke and Nana, and we're really good friends, too. We've been friends since I come to Alaska. There's a heck of a good guy, too, you know. A lot of them guys are good guys. Them trappers.
Now, your son comes up from Eagle River and still traps your lines out here?
He's got my line, it's his now. Yeah, he's been doing it for some time now. Stays at the house, he goes on the machine, comes back next day, you go out again.
That's a real long distance trap line.
Oh, yeah, but see, he makes the fuel sets along the highway too, because sometimes you say, I got a coyote on the way back. When Ted got the first one last year, he got the biggest one in the pack. A beautiful one. He said he got 500 for it in a fur auction bank. Got the highest price. There's one Ted got. See how he does it? He's real neat about it. Just yeah. The way I did. He started from a kid. Even the little ermine. We do them real neat too. They're not worth nothing. But you catch them. Ted'll skin it out. His legs tack it a little. We got little boards for him. He does everything the same way. That's the way I showed him.
Any comments about the Trappers Association? You've been real actively involved, a very generous donor of knives.
Yeah, I wanted to go to the few meetings or maybe to your trapping thing, but in them later years, I just didn't have the energy to do it anymore.
You must believe in what we do.
Yeah, I do believe in what you do. Very good one. I started helping them years ago in early stages. I went to the fling one time, and I didn't know none of the guys. I met one of the guys that was in the group. I seen where people donated stuff. And I remember one time, in the early days, most of the stuff that they had for the fling, I gave. But, you know, I also helped other organizations give knives, too, a lot of them. Matter of fact, up there next to that black bear, there's a whole bunch of patches. About every one of them I've donated knives. The Sheep Foundation, different ones I've helped through the years giving knives. Because I love to do the stuff, and I like people to win stuff. And I'm going to keep doing it to the trappers till I ain't here anymore.
Tell us a little bit about your moose hunting experiences. Maybe the first one you got or the biggest one you got.
I hunted with a guy named Wendell Neff. He came from Fairbanks. He lived out here. I met him when I come up. We bought the track rig together. It was red. It's green now. I sold it here a year or two ago.
Now there's a picture in here of your track rig. It's called Bigfoot.
Yeah. That's a muskeg tractor. We've taken 14 through the years. 60 or better. 72 and a half is the biggest spread.
And that's all out on the flats?
No. Somewhere all the way back by Gold King, back in that area. I'm taking big ones at Ferry. The first big one I got, the 68 and a half incher, when Ted was just a little baby. That one there I got back at Ferry. And then we go west between here and Healy. But now there's so many people in there. They found out how we were getting in there and everything. And there was one guy that had a camp, and he hunted early season with a bunch of guys in a little group, and they would take maybe 3, 4, most 5 at the most. And then when he come out, I'd see he was home here, and I'd call him up and say, how'd it look over there? And he'd tell me. And then we'd go in the last 5 days of the season, usually, 6 at the most. And we'd close it out, because that's when the moose starting to get together would get cows. And we'd sit and watch them for days until they started getting together. And there was nobody in there disturbing them and shooting them up like some of the guys now. We used to talk about it later years when they started, more guys were coming back to the west. I said, pretty soon, we haven't seen a cow between the highway and 6 miles to that first hill you climb. We have not seen a cow in about 6 years in here. What's that tell you? But they had all that land give away between Healy and Clear here. The first years, they didn't have a road to get in there off the highway with a vehicle. So they parked along the road all the time. That's before there was even a road through the canyon down there to the park. And I noticed a place for all out of state. You used to see a lot of moose there. Every time I went to Healy, I'd see moose along the road. Bulls, cows, calves. Pretty soon I go, man, I haven't seen a moose in a month. But as it went on, there were more people. They go fast when they start abusing it. Window and I, we get a big old bull and split it. It lasts till March, April. We look for good trophies. If we can, we get a moose. But we took time. The bigger the moose, the more meat. And the guy said, I like the young ones. But if you've seen a big one, you chewed it, wouldn't you? You're darn right, they go. It's not how big the moose is or what the moose is. It's how you take care of that meat. I've got them in the rut. You get that hide away from that rut. I don't bring that hide out. If I did, I'd drag it behind the track peg on the ground. I've got them in there smell so bad in the rut. You just get that away. I lay a tarp next to the thing and put the quarters, pull it loose as we go. And then I got the place already to hang the meat out there in the woods. So we pull in and hang it up that same day. Get a tarp over it for rain. The wind blows underneath it. Meets someone like leather when you get it home. And then if you wake up in the morning and it's sun and bluebird skies, I'm coming out. If it's rainy, I might wait another day. One time we almost got them out here. We were about 7 Mile Lake coming out, and we hit a rainstorm there, and we covered the moose over the side with the tarp and everything. But, you know, that rain still got on the bed and everything. Got home here. The wife just said, back up here, and she went and got the vinegar. And wiped it down vinegar on the quarters before we put them in the meat house, and everything was good. Vinegar and a sponge or a cloth, and just wipe it down. Pulls the water out. And then I'll go check it the next day. I throw pepper on it so the flies don't get on. But you know what? Flies don't lay eggs on good meat. They start laying around a bullet hole or something. I'll cut that around a bullet hole so nice and pack some of that pepper. They won't lay no eggs in it. And when I used to get a bear down, I'd carry that pepper with me. I'd put in the nose, because that's where they lay eggs. In the nose and the ears and that. I put it in the nose, the mouth, a bear while I'm skinning it out there. Otherwise, you don't notice that they laid them in there. Because see, the blood's in the nose. They might bleed to the nose some. They're going to lay where that blood is, but they won't lay eggs on good meat. And then the liver, I carry these big coolers on the rig. I got mice in them. Put it in these plastic bags and just pound it tight. Okay, we'd get a moose, bring the liver in. I'd lay the liver out at night to cool down. Next morning, I'd get up just at the break of day. I'd get up and I'd go back and get the liver, set it on the table. I'd start cutting it up in packages, put it in there and put it in the cooler. That guy's leave that liver out there. In the daytime, it gets 80 degrees. The liver gets warm, then it gets cool. Then when they bring it home, it's not fit to eat. So I had the liver cut up in packages for the wife. She just put it in the freezer. It's things like that. See, my dad had that dairy farm. He said, hell, you can ruin a cow, too. It ain't the animal. It's what they do to it, you know? Mm. So I was real critical about that. I wouldn't even shoot a moose if it was raining. We were coming out one time, and it was raining buckets. We just got in camp. I just got there. It's raining like hell. He went to the end and tried to shoot one. I hear the shooting, and I just matter. Now I'm getting the tent ready and everything, and I go, it's almost dark, and he shot a moose, and it's raining. I'm not going to go back and help him with it. When he gets there, I say, you do it yourself. He come back. He said, yeah, I did shoot, but I didn't get it because he took off. Said, did you go see if there's blood anywhere? Yeah. And I looked. I know it took him a long time to get back. When he said, well, you know what? I wouldn't have went and helped you. You pissed me off doing something that stupid. They waste more moose. Most of them don't know how to take care of a moose. They ruin the meat. Tell guys how to do it.
So what's the biggest mistake that they make?
A lot of guys got the moose out and they hang with the hide on it to keep the meat clean. And in the later years here, now we've had 80 degrees during moose season. Man, that's too hot. We used to have places where we hung the moose in the big timber where we get up on the roof of the track rig and run a pole across and put a tarp over it and tie it down, huge blue tarp. And then if you need to be, put a couple on the side. and the air would have gotten in there and the meat would be perfect.
Well, you mentioned your son a couple of different times, and you remember some of the early hunting trips with him?
In early days, he never went with me hunting because I couldn't get him out of school. I did take him out of school one time. We had to do his homework and everything, you know, which I didn't mind. When he was 13, took his first moose. It was, look in here, it'll be show you in here, 50-something, 52 and a half.
Kind of the family album?
Yeah, I've got hundreds of thousands of pictures of actually trapping.
So this photograph of your son above the door, was that taken nearby here?
It was taken halfway to Healy, and we took the track rig into the west. That's where we hunted moose. We've probably counted some of the years, like 14, 15 bulls around 60 inches, 50 inches all over. But it didn't take long once they tried to get in there. I knew it was going to happen. We talked about it, the old guy and me. And then they caught us unloading by the highway one time, the guys we didn't want in there.
Now, is this the same one here? It shows him at age 14 with 64 and a half inch.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's an old moose.
I told Ted, like about 3 years before, he was in the high 70s. He was losing ground. But I hadn't seen him like a couple of years, and I thought maybe he died or got hurt during the rut, and the wolves brought him down. But I got to tell you something. We were going after a better one. That one, this is a record book there, that 67 and a half. But we were going after one that was better than that one. On the front beams, looked to me like he had six or seven on one and maybe eight on the back, just loaded with points. He was right in the prime, that bull was. And I said to Ted, that's a better one than mine in the shop. That's the one we were going after. But when we went after, Ted wasn't keeping his eye on it when I moved the rig to get into the area. The moose walked in the bush. I stopped and said, where'd that moose go? Is he still over there? And he goes, no. So now I just creep in there easy, and then we drove up on the hill he was on, shut it off, and we sat there looking, and never did see that one. We sat there for about a half an hour, 45 minutes, and all of a sudden, that one he got comes out about 200 yards, some little ponds that nobody knows about are hidden in the willows. A bull walked off on that, and I go, oh, man, that one's a big one. So he leaned across the roof, one shot, and down he went. We stood there for a second. I said, don't. Because the guys keep shooting, adrenaline gets pumped out, and might run off. I've never had a moose run off like that, because you shoot, and he stops. He don't know what happened. He really don't know that shot. We only won, but he knows something's going wrong. And he'll stand there, he'll get drawn, and pretty soon over he goes. But if you get a bunch of guys shooting at it, they'll keep going. They don't understand that, them guys.
Gator never pulled any punches. He told it like it was. Let's stop here for a few minutes of sponsor commercials. Next time you visit one of our sponsors, please tell them that you appreciate their support of this program. Now let's get back to Gator Meyer as he shares more stories from his life in the great Alaskan outdoors.
Do you ever go after sheep?
Sheep?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I like to go after sheep.
Well, tell us about your favorite hunting trip.
You know what? I've had so many, I don't really know my favorite one. The Chugach Mountains was fun because you went in on horseback. Then the guy would take the horses back to the main camp, and I walked. And then the guy used to hunt for me. He'd be in there a couple of days and say, you don't mind if I go out? I said, I know where you'll be. I stayed in there alone. See all kind of stuff. I've seen sheep in a high 40s you couldn't get. You could shoot them, but you couldn't get at them.
They were in just such steep terrain.
On these pedestals. If you shot them there and then fall back, you can't get up there. I mean, I tried. I got in places. I didn't know if I was going to get off the mountain. I was back in places in Chugach with goats. And I thought, one time, I ain't going to get off of here. Because when you go up and go down, it's different. You took stuff away you need that you were grabbing a hold of. Like sword, we hunted ghosts one time. When you go up on another level, you climb through a big spruce tree. And you're pulling rocks off the bank and everything. Now you got to go back down that. When you find out you can't get down no other way, you learn that stuff.
And then those handholds that you'd used the first time, they weren't there anymore.
Yeah, you pulled them away. Mm-hmm. Or broke off or something. Mm-hmm. Or the guy with you did. So you're hanging there for a while. The guy's telling you, put your feet over this way, okay. I mean, my hands are like claws hanging in there. I went down a chute one time, like a snow chute, just a small one, but it snowed during the night. I was going to put on my ice crimpers. I carried them, but I only used them when it was really bad. And I crossed this little chute, and my feet went above my head, and I go down that chute. Well, first thing I lay over was my gun, and I'm going down, and stuff's coming out of my pack, I knew. And I went over a little waterfall. And I'm trying to grab the brush. I'm spreading my feet. I'm trying everything. Yeah, I went over another one that was pretty good, about 6 feet. And that thing, lucky there wasn't no rocks in it. And I started grabbing for the bank. Finally, I got stopped. I laid there on my back to get my composure. I got up and picked my pack up and picked up stuff around there and sat there. Got a drink of water out of my bottle. I said, I'm going to walk down and see the next one. The next one would probably kill me. It had rocks like that. It was about 40-foot drop. That scared me. But you learn about that stuff. And then the glacier, there was places you couldn't get off the glacier unless you jumped them crevices. That's the only way you could get off of there or get back in there. We had one crevice we had to jump. You had to jump 6 feet. I could do it with a pack on your back, but the guy went with me. He had a hard time doing it with no pack. I would always take my pack off if I was alone, and I'd just throw my pack over there, and then I'd run. I could jump it and dive forward. You could look down in there deep where that thing goes and then flares out. Every year you hear that. Somebody got in a crevice somewhere, or in a winter snow machine. He's get in there and get wedged. How are you going to get the guy up? I carry a parachute cord, but you ain't going to pull nobody up with that, son. I mean, that guy's down there. By the time you get help, he's dead. Froze to death. That's scary. That Chugach is some rough stuff, I'll tell you. But, man, it's pretty country. That's why there's big rams there, too.
What was the longest shot you had to take at a sheep?
I want to tell you something. People don't believe me. I've only shot one ram ever over 100 yards.
Just that good at sneaking up on them.
I sneak up patient, yeah. That's why I like to hunt sheep alone. The other guy talks, and then the sheep hear you. If you get somebody that don't talk, you're okay. But they have to understand sheep, too, that they can't talk all the time. You can stop, take a break, and talk. If you move rocks, they generally don't even pay attention because rocks fall all the time. You hear them when they're sitting there. I was in the Wood River one year, and I got way back in there. And I don't know how far back. I was a long ways. On top of the mountain, I seen 7 bunches of sheep from one place. I glassed them. I sleep up high at night. No bears then, you know. I'd never seen a bear track or a bear up that high. Now, if you had a kill up there and it was spoiling, they'd got a whiff at them, I'm sure they'd go up and get it. I never used a tent in the early years. I sat inside of a bank or something. That's tough. That one year, it rained every day. And I said, never again. I had a tent after that. And I noticed the horses, like, he would only go as far as he had to go up there with the horses. If they seen some sheep just started getting in their little ways, they would shoot the sheep. There's some legal ones there, and the guy just get their 3/4 curl. When it was 3/4 curl, when you hunt with outfitters, he's going to try to shoot anything so he can get you out of there and get a new guy in there, right? I couldn't settle for that. I didn't go to hunt them to get a 3/4 curl. They should have had full curls from the day I got here. Well, actually, when I got to Alaska, that first year, you could shoot 2 rams in the Brooks Range. I can't even pack one out. How the hell is he going to get 2, you know? I remember Brooks Range. Honest to God, one time there was like 8 down rams in a bunch. The smallest one was about 35 inches. There was one over 40, I figured, 2 in the 38-inch class. The heaviest packs I packed out of Chugach was over 100 pounds, 112 or 14. But the way I did the sheep was, I took the back strap and tenderloin out. I put it in like the cheesecloth, rolled it up. Then I took the ribs, I cut them off down the backbone, and they would fold up like a bunch of sticks. I quartered them, and the quarters I'd lead together and put them in cheesecloth and put them in my pack. And I'd eat that stuff first. As soon as I got down, I'd make a fire. I was eating some sheep. Boy, it's good. Oh, man. That's the best meat I've ever tasted. Well, everything's good, though. I bet people tell me they don't like caribou. What do you do to it? That's how you take care of it.
Well, you haven't talked about caribou.
I haven't killed a whole lot of caribou. Years ago, I used to shoot some bag of fairy. You were allowed 4 or 5 in this area. I never shot a really big one years ago off the Wood River. Now, I seen one I thought would break the world record, that Loshi caribou. But I had my brother-in-law with me. He wanted to get a sheep, so we'd either had to get the sheep and get the caribou out because we'd have to make to every 2 packs. Now, you're in between 2 places. So I could have got it on the Wood River to the cabin hung under the leaves. That would have been okay, but then you got back, probably a grizzly would be on the other half. Or either way, maybe you come back to the cabin, a grizzly got there. So it's pretty tough. It was too far out. The one with it was the record book one. The one that used to be the world record. Ray Loach, he got it. This caribou, look at Danny go through that. His shovel was like that, 2 of them. I got a big one in here, but it was longer than this shovel. Even on his brow tines were loaded. I don't see how you could see. And top was huge, massive. I said, I'll never see one in your life like that again. And I never have. I've seen thousands of caribou, though. Brooks Range.
Now, what did you hunt for up there? Sheep?
Sheep, man. I killed a grizzly up there one year. That one there. But I got an 8'8" one onto this area.
8'8".
Yeah.
Big bear.
I thought the thing was going to come on. It was getting ready to length season. Grizzly season was open yet. I was just checking the line out where I hadn't trapped for a while. And the sun was going down in the west. And I seen a bear through the trees. Well, I was putting the sticks up on the trees. So when it snows, you can find them all, you know. And they're laying all over, you know, how they'll fall on the ground. And I looked, and I go, man, that's the biggest black bear. And I'm taking some really big black bears. And I looked again. It wolfed at me, so it seen me. And it was like 150 feet away. And it's starting to get dark there. The sun is kind of over. You can just see light in the west. And I go, I better take that thing, because then he already knows I'm here. And he can come on me. I'll shoot him, so I did. Couldn't get him over. I had to cut him in half to skin him. So I took the hide down the cantwell a couple of days later, and I laid it out on the lawn. I didn't stretch it enough. That was laying out, just limp, like you're supposed to do it. He was 8'8", but it boiled the skull out too long. It shrunk a lot. You got to have 24 inches to make the grizzly one. It was 23 and 13 sixteenths. 3/16. I should have known better. I did it with a black bear years ago.
Yeah, he still had a nice trophy anyway.
Yeah, I got a rug in the house. This elk's from Fallback Island. I found that one dead, 6x6. The horns were chewed on, and the guy restored it for me. We were in big timber deer hunting. I started seeing some bones. And now I start looking. I go, hey. When we looked and looked, we was getting ready to give up. We looked through this whole long draw, had huge trees in. And then finally I found the horns. But another guy across on Raspberry Island the same year found one 7x7, a kill.
We hadn't talked very much about deer, and I see there's quite a few
Kodiak deer.
Yeah. Are these all Kodiaks?
That's a whitetail here. That was sent to me to come out of Saskatchewan. My guy, I did some eyes for. That was on his chin, and he sawed the horns out. There's 4 inches missing. He scores 185. His beam's almost 30 inches. I sent him to Wisconsin. The taxidermist mounted some of these deer in here. I give him a Sasika buck that made the record book, but I didn't get it. He was bigger than any I've ever taken. But I got two in here that'll go in the book, though. That one in the corner up there high, it'll go in Boone and Crockett, but I never entered it. Actually, I've never entered none of the moose in there.
What's the appeal of Kodiak for you?
Beautiful country. I wouldn't want to live there because it rains too much, huh? And seafood, just fresh all the time. I knew people out there, old people. Guys a little bit older than I was, they're all deceased now. I've lost every friend but one I knew over there, the old guys that I hunted with. They fished in the summer, and then in the winter they took it easy. They lived out there. Old canneries that the earthquake ruined, they can't use them anymore, but you can walk in there and see all the stuff.
You've mentioned a couple different times about your knife making. How did you get into that?
How did I get into it? Machinist at work. He made knives. So I tell you teach me. So I went and did some with him. And then we said, you're better at making them than I am right now. You make them, I'll carve them, and then we sell them. And then I found a knife maker outside that sent me his blades. I got all the horn I could use in Kodiak. It was a deer horn. I used the moose too. Deer is the best, though. So I'd get the deer horns from guy in Kodiak. We'd trade their knives. And these guys that lived out there every year, they'd pick up sheds while they were hunting. Sheds laying all over. I picked up 50-some sheds over there in Raspberry Island one day. I found with the deer at certain times of the year when they start shedding, they're usually down near the beaches. Or when the tide goes out, they'll drop them way out there. But the wave action will bring them in. You find them up along the beach. So I used to walk that and find them in the drift.
More than anything, I was interested in the carving aspect of it. Were you self-taught?
I just started fooling around. So I started to see carvings in horn and gift shops around the state. And I looked at that, and I said to the wife, you know what? Man, I can do better than that if I can find the right tools. So I bought a Dremel outfit, and they had a lot of different bits. But you can't even get them today. I've got some old ones I'm still using. They're worn out, but I still got to use them some. So I started getting the Dremel bits, and then four of them made bits. Well, you see, I draw it on with a felt tip marker. If I don't like the sheep or a bear, I can erase it. And I do it again. And sometimes I do it 10 times. But I'm better now where I don't take as many, do you see?
Well, that's all the time we have for today's episode of Alaska Tracks. I hope you enjoyed listening to a giant of a man we all knew as Gator.
You have been listening to Alaska Tracks, a blend of interviews, storytelling, and firsthand accounts from Alaskans who know the land and carry forward the traditions of this remarkable state. Alaska Tracks has been brought to you by Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding and Extreme North Trailers, Rod Saw Shop, and Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware. Join us next Saturday for another episode of Alaska Tracks, about Alaskans, for Alaskans, by Alaskans.